Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November 14th, 2014. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
And our guest co-host, Amir Ali, who is also training on the controls today. Hey.
Hey, guys. Amir.
Alyssa and Carissa are away today. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. So we have a bit of a different program for you today, where we will be presenting one feature interview on a topic that we haven't yet covered in an in-depth manner, and that is about the production of what is known as humane meat, milk, and eggs. We have longtime animal activist and author Hope Bohanic on the show today. She has done extensive research on the subject of the humane meat industry and has co-authored a book called The Ultimate Betrayal, Is There Happy Meat?, in which she gives a detailed analysis of all the facets concerning the humane meat industry. We'll learn in this interview why she describes the production of this so-called happy meat, the ultimate betrayal, and it's really a solid-clad argument, I think, that will convince even the most ardent humane meat eaters who care about the welfare of the animals they are consuming. It is a great interview. I spoke with Hope earlier this week, and we look forward to sharing that with you in about 10 minutes, so please do stay tuned for that.
So that was This World by Steve and Sheila, who other activists may know are Elmira Tanner's parents. They did a great job at the talent show that we're going to talk a little bit about. This talent show happened last Saturday, and it involved a lot of different activists and people involved with change making and social justice. And it was amazing, just the amount of people that showed up and the support that everyone provided to each other during their performances. A good range of talent from poems, instrumentals, song singing, and just a lot of creativity, a lot of variety in messaging, and it was really powerful. What did you both think? You were both there as well.
Yeah, I thought that had a really great energy there. It felt really good to be there, and people generally seemed to love it.
This was also the first time that anything like this, it was called the Animal, first of all, hosted by Animal Voices, the Animal Liberation Talent Show. And I believe really the first of its kind in Vancouver, for sure. And I don't really know of any kind of show like this really happening elsewhere in the world. Do you, Jackie? Was it just your idea?
I think that it was something that a lot of us at Animal Voices, or a few of us at Animal Voices, had talked about in the past, just to bring, you know, creative voices together. And we had initially, I think maybe possibly Alyssa had initially thought, you know, a music show, and I kind of thought talent show, let's get everyone doing variety of talents and get this going. It was originally supposed to happen last spring, but we had a few delays and it happened, and I definitely want to do this again. And I think it's great to just, you know, use more art, whether, you know, performance art or physical art pieces in activism, because it does have, you know, a more, I guess, emotional side to it that I feel can reach out to the crowd in Vancouver, I think, really well, because, you know, we do have an artistic environment here.
Yeah, for sure. And not only that, but everyone has that emotional side, as you said, that artistic side. And it's definitely a way to it's a different way, kind of way to reach out to people, where I see that in Vancouver, at least, there's a lot of demos and protests going on. And this is a different kind of outreach where you're messaging through art. Right. All of the pieces had that were performed had some kind of a social justice and mostly animal rights message. Amir, you even performed. Mm-hmm. That was really awesome. I didn't know you played guitar. That's great, because I've tried to play guitar and I've taken lots of lessons and I'm not very good. I really applaud you being able to sing and play guitar at the same time.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I would actually even argue that, you know, demonstrations in a lot of the case are art, you know, it depends. Mm. It's performance art, essentially. Also with a very clear message of, you know, creating change. Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have wanted to go to the cafe to hear people though yelling, no fur, no fur. This is a little bit different though. You have to admit.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's a little bit, you know, less heated, less confrontational. And it also, you know, gets people the confidence to hopefully go out and do these other actions, because they are speaking in an environment, starting out with, in an environment where they are supported and where, you know, we all kind of can relate to the message. And then hopefully that will inspire people to go out and take more action in a public sector as well.
And Jackie, you organized this this evening. What kind of tips would you give to our listeners who would want to maybe organize something similar? Basically, you had to book a venue and get a lineup of activists who had a message to share through their talents.
Yeah, I would like to say like it was really hard, but actually it was probably one of the easier events that I've organized with Animal Voices. Really, it's just knowing people and just reaching out to people, even, you know, people that don't think they have a skill, just being like, hey, like what can you bring to this show? A lot of people write poetry, a lot of people write stories. Like, I consider that a talent as well for art. So just reaching out to people, booking a venue. Heartwood Community Cafe was really generous with letting us use their space for a very nominal fee.
We ate all their vegan treats. They should have made more.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great place. So I recommend reaching out to them. And yeah, just, you know, reaching out to local artists in the community. And we definitely plan on doing one again, possibly even in February. So we'll keep you informed of our future events.
And I just want to say, too, stay tuned for the closing song. You're going to hear some more from the talent show.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So are you guys going to be voting today?
It's tomorrow, isn't it?
Oh, tomorrow.
So no, I won't be voting
good
today.
Good. So you've got some time to think about it. A big issue for animal rights people, I guess, in this election is
Civic election.
Is the citation bylaw, which involves the whales in captivity. And you're probably wondering who to vote for regarding this. And Jackie, maybe you can touch on this a bit more. But I think the NPA is the main party that is not going to be supporting not keeping whales in captivity anymore. And they don't really care too much, I guess, about this issue.
Yeah, essentially, Kirk Lapointe has said that if elected, he plans to... A breeding ban was basically recently moved forth for the Vancouver Aquarium to no longer allow the breeding of the cetaceans in captivity.
It's been put in place.
It's been put in place, yeah. And so Kirk Lapointe essentially said that if elected, he was just going to, you know, nix the ban. So, don't vote Kirk Lapointe. I can't recommend who to vote for, but...
I know that Gregor Robertson did make a statement in support of not keeping whales in captivity anymore, which kind of surprised me, but I guess he has been pretty green overall in his messaging the last couple years. So,
and if you want to see a list of all the different people who are up for election and whether they support the ban or not, vanequifax.org has posted a list that they made up on their Facebook page, which I actually reposted to our Facebook page yesterday, and it's a really good graphic to take a look at that. So go to Animal Voices Vancouver to check out that that graphic to see who all supports it and who doesn't. So I wanted to talk about an event that I'm actually hosting and organizing next week. It's a vegan dinner meetup at the Wallflower Modern Diner. Have either of you been there before?
Yeah, a few times, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they have a really great vegan menu. They're an omnivorous restaurant with a separate gluten-free menu and a separate vegan menu. Really great comfort food, which is why we had this. So I volunteer with Vancouver Meatless Meetup, and we have dinner a lot and all other kinds of vegan food meetups, about one every week. And I hosted and organized the same one there this summer, and it went over really well. So we thought we would do it again. So this is happening on Tuesday, November the 18th at 7 p.m. at the Wallflower Diner at 2420 Main Street. So just wanted to give you a teaser of some of the mouthwatering food you might expect to have there if you want to come check it out. We're having vegan poutine, which, I mean, come on, vegan poutine, that's about as comforting as you can get. A vegan spinach salad, which I remember from last time was really delicious. A baked mac and cheesy, it's called, with vegan cheddar cheese and a vegan cheese sauce. A vegan shepherd's pie and a creme brulee and vegan ice cream sandwich, which was also really delicious. So the total cost for this dinner, it's $18.50. That's all inclusive. It includes tax and tip. And if you want more info on this dinner and to register, you can go to meetup.com/meatless meetup. That's M-E-A-T-L-E-S-S meetup.
One other event coming up next weekend, actually, Saturday, November the 22nd, is the horse-drawn carriage protest in Victoria. This is in response to the success of the horse carriage industry taking place in Victoria. And if you've been to Victoria, you've definitely seen the horses on the street.
Mm-hmm.
The group Island Animal Liberation has scheduled a protest against the oppression and exploitation of these animals. There will be a sign-making get-together beforehand, and extra signs will be made available if possible. Details about the location will be posted soon, but for now, to keep you updated, you can search for the event Horse-Drawn Carriage Protest on Facebook.
I think this is a really important issue, which is why I'd wanted to mention it on the events this week, and I'd really like to actually do more of an interview on this subject in the future. We've talked about the horse carriages in New York before, and now it's really come, it's local too, it's close to home here in Victoria on the island. So if you do have an animal-related event that you would like to have advertised on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver. Today's feature interview is with Hope Bohanic. Hope has been active in animal protection and environmental activism for over 20 years and is a nationally recognized leader and speaker in the animal protection movement. Many years ago, while living 80 feet off the ground in a redwood tree so it would not be cut, Hope dedicated herself to animal and environmental causes and has since organized countless public education campaigns, demonstrations, and fundraisers to offer a voice for animals. Hope is currently the projects manager for United Poultry Concerns, but other than that, she has co-authored a book with Kogan Bohanic entitled The Ultimate Betrayal, Is There Happy Meat? And today she comes to us to discuss that exact question and to enlighten us on the details involved with the process of producing what is often called happy or humane meat. That is, raising animals with so-called humane standards as opposed to their factory-farmed counterparts. Hello, Hope, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about what I like to call the myth of humane meat. We haven't done an in-depth interview on this topic before, so I really appreciate that you've written a whole book about it, and you're here today to help further disseminate and explain some of the details involved when it comes to raising animals for meat and byproducts that use labels such as cage-free or organic or grass-fed, etc. So first of all, in your 20 years of being an activist for the animals and being alert to the issues, what have you observed along the way in the progression of how people have come along from willingly and blindly eating factory farmed animals to perhaps starting to have more of an awareness of the issues surrounding how these products are produced and wanting to become more mindful consumers in this process?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because, you know, I've been vegan myself for 25 years and been working on these issues for about 20 years. And I've been having conversations with people about food and animals that are bred for food and all of these issues for many, many years. And the conversations have been about the same. They've all been, you know, you get the same questions and they were always usually about, you know, formulated the same. But something shifted about maybe 3 to 5 years ago. And I started hearing people say things like, oh, well, I buy free-range eggs. And I buy humane meat. And it was just really interesting because for a lot of those conversations, it was almost like they felt that the conversation had ended and that now, you know, there's an option and the animals are happy and isn't that great? And so as this was happening more and more, I felt that it was a really important issue to look into and delve deeply into. And that's why I did the extensive research that I did on my book, Going to Farms, Going to Farm Sanctuaries where these animals have been rescued, interviewing farmers, interviewing undercover investigators, former workers. And I learned a great deal. And I think that there's a positive aspect to this too, and that's because over the last 10 years or so, animal activists have been going undercover in these, you know, horrible industrial farms and documenting what kinds of, you know, miserable, horrible lives these animals live, what they suffer, and we're seeing that now in video and photographs, and it's really waking people up. And people, and I think this is a really beautiful thing that we have to our advantage, people love animals. They love animals. They don't want to see animals suffer. And, you know, there's, of course, a bit of a disconnect with farmed animals, and we can get more into that. But in general, they love animals. They don't want to see them suffer. So, and as they learn about what's happening on these farms, more and more people have been seeking alternatives. And the industry has been responding and giving them those alternatives in the form of these feel-good labels, the humane and cage-free and sustainable, and all these labels that make consumers feel better about what they're buying, to the point where they're willing to pay much more money to buy these products. So the evolution of that, of course, and what we have to focus on now, I believe, is that we should not kill these animals at all. If you love animals, if you don't want them to suffer, then of course you shouldn't kill them. They should be allowed to live their lives out.
Yeah, it's absolutely an evolution, I think. I think for people to make the leap in their minds to not eat these products at all, it's just too far of a leap. And I think people, they really think that they are doing a good thing when they pay that extra money and take the extra time to source out this so-called happy meat. And we'll get more into that deceiving term later. But first, I want to break down some of the misnomers that are given to these animal products for consumption. So obviously, people, for the most part, I think they're willing to believe the labels that the big industries give their food products and to trust these labels in having confidence when they are making their purchasing decisions. So, you know, I'm talking about the typical humane food labels such as free-range, grass-fed, cage-free, local, all-natural, certified humane, and certified organic. So let's talk about these labels in general. I know you call them feel-good buzzwords. Can you tell us as a whole what the regulatory standards are in the food industry in order to allow food producers to give the meat, milk, and eggs they are selling these kinds of labels?
Well, you know, the regulation is so lax. It's really ridiculous. So most of the labels that you just mentioned, cage-free, free-range, local, the only thing that a farmer has to do, and not even for all of them, for most of them, free-range, these kinds of labels, all the farmer has to do is fill out a form, and send it in to the regulatory agency. They are awarded the label. No inspection of the farm comes out to see what's going on that farm, and no one is rejected from getting the label. So basically, it means nothing. There's no meaning behind it. Anyone can get awarded these labels, no matter what the farm's doing.
So out of all those labels I mentioned, which of them actually require inspection, any kind of inspection to actually get them certified, or are you saying there's none at all?
Well, organic does have, is really the only one with any kind of on-site inspection. And, and what they're looking for, though, is so limited and minimal. As far as the animal's experience and the humane aspect of what that animal lives through. For instance, with organic, they're looking for to make sure that the feed fed to the animals is organic, that the animal is free of any antibiotics and hormones and other chemicals. So both of these things, of course, are really more for the human than for the animal, the human that's consuming them, and their health. And the only regulation that has anything to do with humane is that in some instances, and not all animals, but some, have to have access to the outside. But this access, can be so minimal for a cage-free operation or a chicken operation or egg operation that's organic with access to the outside. That can just mean, a little 5x5 concrete patio that they open the door of this, windowless warehouse to this little outside patio that's so unappealing, no bird would even want to go out there. And they can call that access to the outside and therefore be awarded the free range label, as well as be compliant with organic standards. There's an inherent cruelty in this industry, in the animal agriculture industry, that just cannot be washed away with a humane label, not even organic. Even on organic farms, you still see the separation of families, the taken away of the babies from the mothers right at birth, the debeaking and castration and dehorning and so crowded conditions, and of course going to slaughter at very young ages. So there's still these inherent cruelties, things that are standard on a conventional farm that you see in organic farms or a humane farm. The differences are so minimal. It's really the similarities that we need to look at, and those similarities are some really horrible, cruel things for animals.
I like that in your book you use a quote from Mark Twain which says, "It's easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled." So why do food producers, do you think, apply and use these labels in the selling of their products when they really do mean nothing? And I think I'm going to know your answer here, but I'm asking you anyways.
Well, they've been seeing actually a drop. For the first time ever, a drop in the sales of meat, dairy, and eggs over the last, 6 or 7 years, the sales have been dropping. And, a lot of people will say, oh, it's the economy. But when people are told, they absolutely say that ethics to animals and the concern for animals is a big reason why they are reducing their amount of meat, dairy, and eggs that they're buying. So the industry is responding, and they have to respond to these concerns and criticisms. And they're doing all that they can to recover their reputation. And these labels are something that, makes the consumer feel good. Oh, they're trying, they're making it better for the animal, and now I can eat my dairy and feel like the animal is happy. And that's what our job is now. So now we've got to really shift our message to show people that these labels are lies. They are just marketing ploys to get your consumer dollars.
Right, and that's what I was waiting for you to say, is it really is all about the bottom line. These businesses are in business to make money, and actually there's, you know, there's certain industry standards that they have to carry out or else they're not going to make any money. So despite these labeling designations that we've been talking about, and despite any sense of a better life that these animals raised, quote unquote, humanely may experience, I think it's extremely important to recognize that no matter how well a farmed animal is treated during his or her life, like I said, there's those industry standards that still remain, and they need to remain the same in order for the meat, milk, and eggs to be produced. So I'd like to talk about dairy, for example, because this is a really big one in my mind. People think they can drink organic milk and be done with it, but there are so many extraneous factors that come into play in the production of dairy products that really must be noted for anyone who cares about the animals are treated, I think. So please do tell us a bit about how the cows are treated in the dairy industry for even organic or humane dairy products.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and first of all, I do want to just go back for just a minute to the point you were making before about the how it's all about the money. And I think a really interesting thing that I discovered when I was researching the book is that oftentimes, like with egg farming, for instance, there'll be a farm where he has a barn or a big, large, you know, shed of battery cage hens, so the hens that are in the tiny cages where they can't turn around, and, you know, these horrible battery cages. And then the next barn over, he'll have a cage-free operation where it's this windowless warehouse with all the birds, thousands of birds just on the floor. It's still horrible, of course, with the, you know, essentially mowing down, burning their eyes and throats, and they'll still be beak, and, you know, they're out of the cages. It's not the only horror, though, their existence in cage-free can be just as bad. But it's just interesting because people, I think that that the farmers are moving in this direction because they care about the animals and they want to do something that's better for the animals. But in a lot of the cases, they actually will have conventional and then some kind of alternative on the same farm. So the farmer's not doing it for, if he cared about the animals and he thought that it was better, he'd have them all in cage-free. But no, it's because there is a market for it and there are people out there that are going to pay more money for that, you know, product over the other product. So absolutely, it's about the money, but I just kind of wanted to point that out. But getting into dairy, the dairy industry, you know, this is a really interesting one because in organic dairy, it can actually be even worse. So, of course, these cows are going to experience the same thing that they experience on a conventional farm. They're artificially inseminated. They're kept pregnant their whole life. As soon as the baby is born, it's taken away. This is a tragic and horrible thing to experience for the mother and the calf. Some of the mothers would just bellow for days for their baby. A baby is, of course, scared and frightened and alone and cold, and they want the love and comfort of their mother. But these babies are separated out. They're put in little calf hutches, which are, if they're males, of course, they often just get off the farm sold to veal or to a beef producer, so they're going off to meat. If they're males, they'll be kept separated and the calf hutches. It looks like kind of a big doghouse, a white doghouse, where they're chained at the neck. And there'll be these rows and rows and rows of dozens of calf hutches where these babies are all individually chained by the neck. They can move maybe a little bit. They can kind of step out, fight a little, and then turn around barely. And it's horrible. They're confined there. They aren't even able to play with each other. And this is all organic dairy. And then, interestingly, and this is where it gets into the part I was talking about, where it can actually be worse, they can't give the cows antibiotics, vaccines, other drugs that are, you know, medications that keep them healthy because they're still in intensive production. They're still, you know, milked to the extreme. They're still taking the baby away, which is incredibly stressful, so they still get sick. And that's why the industry started using antibiotics in the first place, because all the animals were sick and they needed to stay healthy at least long enough to give enough milk and then they go to slaughter. But what's happening on organic farms is that the cows are still getting like mastitis, which is a terrible infection of the udder, where they can have big open sores and, you know, there's pus and it's just, oozing and terrible and very painful for them to be milked when they have the mastitis infection. But the farmers can't give them medication to clear up these infections. So they just fester and get worse and worse. I interviewed a veterinarian of large animals, and he told me that he had some of the sickest and animals that were in the most pain. Like he saw some of the animals in the worst shape were on organic dairy farms. And it was because of the limitations of what they could give them to help them stay well. And I just thought that was tragic and horrible. So here people are thinking they're paying more for organic dairy, thinking they're getting a better product, a healthier product, and that the animals are happier, but it can be even worse than a conventional farm. So it's just such a deceiving and deceptive industry.
And I think that we would be remiss if you didn't mention what happens to the male calves in the dairy industry. That's what veal is all about.
Absolutely. Of course, the male calves, if they're sold, they sometimes are just going to a beef farm, but a lot of them go to veal. And, you know, here in California, not as bad as other places, but in other places, you know, of course, their chains at the neck can not move at all. It's similar to what happens to the females, though. They, you know, are, again, chained, isolated in a crate, and fed an anemic diet, so their little bones and muscles don't, build and get normal. And they're, again, you know, they're slaughtered at a very young age for veal. And, you know, in California, we now have a law that they are not able to, not allowed to chain them in crates. But what that means is now they're just going to be in a pen, maybe a, you know, 3 foot by 5 foot pen with, you know, 10 other veal calves crammed in there inside, not able to be outside, to run in the grass, to be with their mothers, and then they're slaughtered at the threshold. So it's no better, really. Yeah, the you know, this industry the dairy industry is so exploitive in so many ways, and the males are byproducts of that industry.
You are listening to the Animal Voices show on 100.5 FM CFRO, broadcasting live from Vancouver, Canada, and we are speaking with author and activist Hope Bohannock today on the myth of humane meat.
So let's talk a little bit about eggs. I'd like to cover that as well, just because eggs are such an inherent part of most people's diets, and they're found in so many products on the shelves in the grocery stores as well. But eating organic and cage-free eggs seems to be a really big thing where people's consciousnesses are alleviated into thinking that they are consuming products that are cruelty-free, but that couldn't be further from the truth, of course. So please tell us about eggs.
Absolutely. Well, eggs, there's a very similar thing to what's happening. The calves on the dairy farm, the male calves, in the egg industry, it's not profitable to hatch your own chicks. We went out and asked people what they thought about different aspects of humane egg and chicken production. And one thing we asked is, how do you think the chicks are hatched? And most everyone said, well, in a nest, of course, with the mother. And so people have no idea how this industry works. And any egg producer is not going to be profitable if they hatch their own chicks. They can't make a profit and have a hatchery and hatch their own chicks. So no matter the label, no matter the size of the farm, they're getting their chicks from these industrial hatcheries. And these hatcheries are just brutal, horrible places. I have interviewed undercover investigators that have worked in these places, and it's just so brutal and horrible. The hens are, the chicks are hatched in, these metal drawers, not to a loving hen in a, warm nest. And interestingly, you know, in nature, when there is a natural situation, which there never is in any of these chicken or egg industries, and not the label, but when there's a natural situation and another human is sitting on the clutching eggs, you know, they're communicating. Even when the chick is eating egg, they are actually communicating to each other through clicks and clucks and coos. And, you know, the baby's telling the mother, oh, it needs to be turned or, you know, whatever it is that they need. And the hen knows and she is able to accommodate and keep the eggs healthy. I mean, it's just this beautiful, beautiful natural process that is completely denied in any egg industry. Why does their hatch immediately they start being grabbed and thrown by the workers down conveyor belts and through metal machinery and sorters? And it's just so brutal. So many of them, you know, their little bodies get torn up and their wings get torn off their bodies and their legs get torn, and it's just, they're, you know, caught in the metal machinery. Just so horrible. And then half of them are males, and the males are just not profitable to be raised for meat. They don't grow fast enough as the broiler chickens pump up so fast. And, you know, you're talking about deer calves being killed in just weeks. Broiler chickens are killed in just weeks of life as well. I mean, they're just babies when they're killed. Anyway, going back to the male chicks in the egg industry, they're not profitable to be raised for meat. They don't grow fast enough. So they're just disposed of by the billions, thrown away in the dumpsters in the back of these hatcheries. You know, I've seen the images and video and photos of them just piled up by the thousands, suffocating on their brothers that are on top of them, dying of exposure and dehydration. Some are killed in other ways where they are, you know, masticated and they go down conveyor belts and are put into these big blenders, these metal masticators that just grind them up alive. So horrible. I mean, you know, a chick is a symbol to our society of gentleness and innocence and love. We see them on our Easter cards. And here, this chicken is awful, horrifying industry is killing them brutally by the millions. It's really heart-wrenching. And this, and why I mention all this is that it doesn't matter the label. It doesn't matter the label. The you know, whether it says humane, whether it says organic, whatever. They're getting their the chicks from the hatchery. They are sourcing from the hatchery. So that brutality stands no matter the label. But again, there's those inherent cruelties that you're always going to see, like debuting, and, you know, mostly for, I would say, a huge percentage of an overcrowding. So the cage-free operations that I was talking about are the large ones in warehouses that are packed in together on the floor, with, you know, having to live and stand in their own excrement. You know, just a miserable, mundane, and, you know, horrible life with nothing to do, no sun to feel on their back, no death to death anything. I mean, it's just, so, so sad and terrible. And, you know, even on the best of the best farms, you know, I live, again, in Sonoma County, California, Northern California, and in this area, there's so many farms that are touted as being just, so humane and free range and all of that. Well, I went to one of the, well, I've been to several, but one that I in particular that I want to talk about is a free range farm where the chickens actually did have access to the outside. So that's incredibly unusual. And they were in the little outdoor pens that were maybe the size of a living room, about, you know, five or six in a row of these outdoor pens. But they were full of melons. They were just muddy messes. And right on the other side of the gate, that was the fence that was keeping them in these little pins, was this lush ground that they couldn't get to, you know. And so here's these birds that are supposedly in this, you know, wonderful free-range situation. They're having to, you know, stand in the mud and look out on the green grass. And it's just, you know, there's so so much deception in these labels. It's truly sad.
Well, Also, with regards to Humane and Happy Meat, what it really comes down to me is that all of these animals are slaughtered in the same way as conventionally farmed animals. And that's slaughter. That's death. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really where this all comes down to, is, no matter what kind of life they had, they are slaughtered in the end, whether it's eggs, whether it's dairy, and not, after a long life. We're talking just in a few years, maybe a couple years for dairy, a couple years for chickens laying eggs, and then just weeks or months for any animal that's killed for their meat. And, of course, the majority of them, 99% of these alternative labeled farm animals are going to just your typical slaughterhouse for a horrifying, horrifying slaughter. With chickens, this is something that most people don't realize. When they are hung upside down, the industry will tell you, oh, well, we stun them before the throat cutting. Well, that stunning is an electric bath that electrifies, sends electricity, high volts of electricity through their bodies, is incredibly painful, and it doesn't stun them into numbness. It just paralyzes them. It's really a horrifying, horrifying death. The only truly humane death is euthanasia with chemicals. And that just can't be done. They can't have the chemicals running through their bodies. They've got to sell the meat. So any of the testing is going to be brutal, especially if they have to do it fast, especially if they have to do it efficiently. It is a brutal, definitely violent process to kill a living being. And, it doesn't matter. A cow, she's not going to care if she had a throat slit at the slaughterhouse or at the trailer. she's not going to care. She wants to live and she would fight for life. For chickens, there's a new method, that's been more and more popular, gaining popularity, of using chicken chewing cones. So they're like metal or plastic cones where they put the chicken in upside down, pull her head through the bottom, and slit her throat. If anyone's interested in seeing this process, which is supposedly so much more humane, we have videos of a free-range farm slaughtered into the killing cones on the United Poultry Concerns website, and I really recommend people to watch because, this is not a quick or painless way to die. Throat cutting is very painful. There are numerous pain receptors. It's not a quick way. The animals toss the bleed out. It can take minutes of them kicking in agony. No matter the label, these animals die brutally. There is no such thing as humane slaughter, and we shouldn't hide ourselves from the violence that this is and pretend like it's something else.
Absolutely. I always say that the term humane slaughter is an oxymoron. It just can't exist. And finally, when it comes to even using the term happy meat, you say that there's no such thing because meat is dead and something dead can't be happy. But what I really want to talk about is the main title of this book, which I think sums up what the main message of the book is all about. And you call it The Ultimate Betrayal. Can you tell us what this means in terms of our relationship with these animals who we raised to use as food and why there is this ultimate betrayal?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we care for someone, and animals are someone, not something, when we care for someone, there's a trust that builds, a loyalty and a friendship. And in these situations, most of these situations, it's still brutal and there's not a good relationship with the workers. But even in the very rare instance where someone actually does care and, does have a good relationship with this animal, to turn around and kill this animal that is in your care, that is reliant on you, is only because of your kindness, I'm going to try and go down and kill this animal. It is the ultimate betrayal, and that's why I call the ultimate betrayal. It's a form of abuse. I mean, we consider, the animals that are kicked or, debeaked, that's abuse. But betrayal is an abuse as well. So, these animals are being betrayed. And, it's really interesting. We seem to have, and I mentioned this earlier, and I'd love to talk about it, we seem to have this disconnect with farmed animals. And when we consider the graduation, gradations of transgressions against one another, meaning that, abuse is bad, but killing is worse. Killing is the worst thing that you can do to another being. And, that consideration is not limited to just our human society. We have comprehensive anti-cruelty laws for companion animals as well, as dogs and cats and turtles and birds and any animal that's in our home, that if you abuse that animal, that's bad, you can get fined. If the animal dies because of neglect or abuse, that's worse. You can possibly get a felony or jail time. So we recognize this gradual, gradation of transgressions against one another in all aspects except farmed animals. Farmed animals, we've made this crazy exception for them. I think we're starting to recognize that. And we're at this point where, we at least need to treat them good while they're alive. We want to treat them well while they're alive. That's kind of where we're at, But, it's interesting. So let me ask this question. Would someone rather be hit with a baseball bat or killed? Horrible, horrible choice, of course. We want to think about it. But, if you were faced with this decision, most reasonable people, rational people, would rather be hit with a baseball bat, even if it would be painful, even if it would be debilitating, because they would choose to live. And animals would make that same choice. They fight for life. They want to live. So now let me ask this question. Would it be acceptable for a farmer to hit a pig with a baseball bat? No, of course not. Of course. And no matter what someone's diet was, doesn't matter what anyone, if they're eating animals or not, everyone would agree that you cannot hit a pig with a baseball bat. That's abuse. Then why is it acceptable for the farmer to commit a much greater violation and kill the pig? We're going to come to this realization eventually. It's just so obvious that, taking a healthy young animal's life is beyond reprehensible. We shouldn't do it. We can't do it. And we've got to, move beyond this and become a compassionate vegan world.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge on this subject. I feel like we could go on more and more. And actually, your book covers other areas of the ultimate betrayal, including the environment and health, which we didn't even get into. But before we go, you had mentioned that you are the projects manager of the nonprofit organization United Poultry Concerns. Can you quickly tell us a little bit about your work there, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So United Poultry Concerns is a national nonprofit that promotes the compassionate and respectful treatment of chickens and turkeys. And, of course, we encourage people not to eat them or their eggs. We really believe it's important to focus on chickens as much as possible because a lot of our meat consumption is actually shifting towards chickens. When people say that they're cutting back on meat, when they're pulled further or asked further about it, many of the people are actually just cutting back on beef and pork and replacing it with chicken. And because chicken bodies are so much smaller, they can actually kill more animals by eating more chicken. It's very sad. So many of them are sold. For every one pig that's killed and eaten, 60 chickens are killed. For every one cow that's killed and eaten, 190 chickens are killed. So there's so many more sold, and of course they are arguably in the worst conditions, with just miserable lives. So we really feel it's important to focus on them. And some of the more specific things that we do, we're doing a lot of vegan education and outreach, tables, leafleting, presentations, conferences, all kinds of wonderful things. And another thing that's been very interesting that kind of ties into what you're talking about is we have been working on the backyard slaughter issue and these small farms that are actually offering classes to people on how to slaughter your animals, to come and slaughter, you know, chickens on the farm. Every bird matters, every animal matters, and whether it's a small farm or a large farm, we're going to stick out for them, and we don't want to see any animal killed, no matter what.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Hope, to speak about all this info concerning humane meat. I highly encourage our listeners to read Hope's book called The Ultimate Betrayal, Is There Happy Meat? And you can find out more about it at theultimatebetrayal.com. That is the-ultimate-betrayal.com. Thank you so much for being with us today, Hope.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, so we have some news stories coming up for you. I'm sure most of you have heard of Captain the dog and what happened last year.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah, so Captain was a German Shepherd dog that was found beaten and severely abused in a dumpster and unfortunately died shortly after, despite medical treatment. So the person that had done this, named Brian Whitlock, has been charged with second-degree murder recently of his mother, Barbara, whose body was found inside her home on Vancouver's West Side Saturday. Whitlock was taken into custody Sunday morning following an eight-hour-long police standoff after barricading himself inside the residence at 3171 West 23rd Avenue. Surprised they gave their address, but that's good, I guess.
That's an interesting part of the story.
Okay. In 2013, Whitlock admitted to beating his German Shepherd dog, Captain, with a baseball bat and leaving him to die in a Kitsilano dumpster. And regarding Captain, the lawyer told the court that the client was suffering from mental illness. Whitlock was sentenced to 60 days in jail, and I don't believe that, unfortunately, he received any sort of, you know, real psychological evaluation or assistance.
So basically they put him in jail for 60 days for killing his dog and severely abusing his dog. Yeah. And then he got out of jail and then he did it again, but this time to a human.
Yeah, about a year right. later. And I don't, I'm saying that, but I actually don't know what the probation orders were, but I'm just assuming because that's all that the information is giving here. Police said they received a 911 call around 8:30 p.m. Pacific time Saturday after a relative discovered Barbara Whitlock's body in her home. Whitlock was arrested shortly before 5 a.m. on Sunday after coming out of the house, but police fired a round from an Arwen gun, which fires a plastic projectile, because he was non-compliant. Vancouver police said he was checked by paramedics and medically cleared. And there's also some information relating to Whitlock actually setting fires inside the home. So Vancouver police spokesman Constable Brian Montague said that during the standoff, police cleared neighboring homes after Whitlock lit a number of small fires inside the house. Whitlock made a short appearance in Vancouver Provincial Court this morning where he agreed not to have further contact or speak with witnesses Spencer and Jeffrey Whitlock. He will remain in custody until his next court appearance, which is November 24th. So I guess we can follow up on this story, but it's a very heartbreaking story.
The story goes on.
Yeah.
Abuses animal, kills his animal, and then kills his mother. End of story. Well, not yet.
I think it's sad for everyone involved. You know, it's sad for sad for this human, Brian Whitlock, sad for, you know, the family, sad for the mother, and of course sad for Captain as well. It's sad for everyone involved in the situation. So hopefully he can get the help that he needs. Next story, heavily hunted wolf populations have elevated stress and reproductive hormones, study reveals. Wolves from heavily hunted populations in northern Canada show elevated stress and reproductive hormones, physiological effects that could have evolutionary implications, according to a study published Wednesday in the scientific journal Functional Ecology. Hunting can disrupt a wolf pack's complex social structure, alter normal reproductive behavior, and introduce chronic stress that may have evolutionary consequences, the study found. Hunting can also decrease pack size, resulting in altered predation patterns, increased time spent defending kill sites from scavengers, and may lead to increased conflict with human and livestock, the study added.
So because of human intervention, the calls are needed. Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, that's really, you know, that is the main problem with these issues. So yeah, this is a study done on a variety of wolves, and just saying that essentially, you know, killing wolves, it disrupts their entire hierarchical pack structure, and it's causing increased problems with both humans as well as livestock and within the packs themselves.
Well, thanks for the news, Jackie.
Yeah. So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver on unceded Coast Salish territories. And we would also like you to keep connected with us online. Visit animalvoices.org, where you can download our shows as podcasts. Like our page at facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at animalvoicesYVR. And we want to hear all your comments, complaints, things you like, things you didn't like. Just send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or by emailing radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And this also would be great to hear, like, what people want to hear on the show. Any information would be awesome from our listeners. And we're closing the show today with a song called Dogs in the Yard by Sinead Sanders. And it was a recording from the Animal Liberation Talent Show last week. And it's a song about how we act like we are the only animals on the planet.
So it's a good place to have the time.